with a revenge poem. I think every poet probably has one, or if they don't have one, they just haven't actually written it down and haven't shared it with anyone. This particular revenge poem I wrote a few years ago. I have a 5-year-old son now, but in the year after he was born, I went through a phase of writing a lot of poems about the experience of first-time motherhood and early motherhood, which I call the Mother Truth sequence. And they ended up in my chapbook, 20 Oaks of the Weather Girl, as the central sequence. And this is my revenge poem, called Sunrise. On a good day, I greet our early morning with as much sunshine as the house can hold. Brought to life by your hungry smile, my stretches tickled by your flash of laughter. On the bad days, the mornings after the teething before, I sulk at the sun beaming down on your smile, swearing gently to your curious fingers that I will wake you at 6:30 a.m. every Saturday of your teenage years. And I will. I write a lot about relationships, not just romantic relationships. I tend to write about the relationships between mothers and children and family relationships. But I also write about relationships. And in this one, which I wrote some time ago now, I think I was contemplating absence. I listened to the wind. If I lived 300 years without you, I would create you myself, or recreate you, conjure you up with my best witch's spell. I'd mix the dust from the back of a number 9 bus, my last lover's breath trapped as fog on my window pane, and a shard of glass with my blood in a vat chanting. I call you my mole, the crone of the night wind, bloodless, lightless, white in the storm, soaring the night wind with sinking moon's life. Relinquish taboos, let me give life. With this spell, I would concoct you, my love man, my touch. If 300 years passed without you, I would take the inert flesh of one living man, pour in this potion, and conjure you up full of trust. I would look in the mirror and see you. But in a few days, a week, the best I can do is remember the tip of your nose as you slept and wait for your voice. This one's called 3 months. While my sister sleeps, I dream for her. Prophetic dreams of unripe fruit and climbs and quiet celebration. With plans of trips and mending to do, I forget to tell her about her gifts. My sister hears voices in her head, voices no one else can hear. They speak the words she cannot say, words she will never share with me. She sleeps in a field of poppies, unguarded. Restless and mumbling with no apparent meaning or clarity. Sometimes I hear a chuckle in her turnings. Who sleeps their dreams with her? What stranger shares this dream life that slips out over the edges? Her presence grows and deepens. This is from this is a chapbook myself and Eve Casby did together, published by Lapwing. We're out the road, going around reading, showing it to people, selling it, hopefully, maybe. I don't really want to say too much about the poems. I do like talking between a bit because I write little small poems. Some people write big long poems so they can really, you know, let it all out in poems. And I haven't really written many long poems. And Dermot Healy, the poet and fiction writer, novelist, once said to me, if you recognized what I needed was patience. And I know I'm kind of an impatient person, so maybe I'll earn patience, maybe it'll grow, maybe in my old age I'll pick up knitting or something and I'll learn patience, but I haven't got it yet. So I wrote this one, Touch Close. I was driving past two lovely teenage lovers, and they were on the street kissing and arms entwined, and it was the type of connection that you can only make in the early stages of a relationship. Touch close, breaking space. We begin and the Arctic Ocean is between us. We squeeze that space until the prints of our bodies meld, pressing out the seven names for blue we will learn. I hold your hand between two dreams of what could be and the words we will use, and already I am losing myself, forgetting the world where you were not, forgetting years where I did not hold your hand, and that we began separately, a plate drift apart. This is your nose close to mine, your eyelashes grazing my cheek, my careful breath. I watch your dreaming eyes move in sleep, and I forget to tell you the colors I see, the red flags and yellow love painted to run orange, and what we will do to each other on the days without color. Okay, I don't forget, but I don't want to shock this pure whole skin on skin where we begin. I came to writing really from reading, which I think most writers probably do. And my reading really took place in the library. My early reading took place in the library, the public library in Canada. We lived in a small town, and my mother, not having a lot of money and with three young children, brought us to the local library all the time as a way to keep us out of trouble, and so she could wander off and read her magazines or whatever she wanted to do. And I think public libraries, they're funny, I still use the library. I'm one of the few people I know that actually borrows books regularly, and, you know, that they all know me in the library. There's just, I just think they're particularly special places to access, to open your mind up and to access other worlds. And I wrote this poem, as an homage to them, called The Borrower. Do they know I would swallow them whole? I have lined the bottom of my belly with syntax, sustained by vowels and skim milk. Fill the books submit their truth. I have invented worlds for myself from the words found in four libraries, gained a family, learnt myself, lost myself, consumed my own words. The neat rows of print let me in, never question my credentials, slip open at the slightest nudge. I feed myself on their words, my lips blew black from the ink. Up close, you can see the letters that slipped off the page, imprinted on my skin. In Galway, there's been a lot of development. Oh, Cork is the thing, you know, just with all the commercialization. And the weird thing that happens is then the city itself gets in on it, and the city council decides that Eyre Square, it wasn't fancy enough, and it wasn't, you know, we're a European city, and, you know, Galway's barely a town, like, you know, but Eyre Square needed to be done up because where everybody ends up, so they tore the whole place up, and there were huge amounts of messing going on. They actually ran out of money at some point, and the developers messed up, and the wrong stone was put down, the stone had to be taken up, and trees that had been growing there for the last 100 years weren't good enough anymore. So they were all dug up and moved out to, I think, Merview Church got them, and new fancy trees were put in, and so the whole place was fancy. In the meantime, there's the square was, you know, a lot of life took place in the square, so there was a group of winos and homeless guys that used to hang out there. And I kind of thought it was interesting that, like, they basically had their, they had their front room dug up, like. So I thought I'd write this. It's called City. You watched it all from the top of the square, the leaning on shovels, shouts for more sand. Trees moved out to the other side of town. warmed by the touch of Dutch gold, you found shelter beneath clear glass, a home in a lamp bus stop, set out at the show. Kept your seat during the cleanse of rain, tried to ignore the outsiders squeezed in around you, the toe and elbow shuffle. Water dripped down to fourth wall. Back in your old patch, you claimed the granite behind the toilet. Only you can see the blood stains on each square, the faded map for belonging. You find the steps left over from the last session. Try out this new way of walking. When your arches fail you, you will sit and watch the early men battle the quick grime, the pigeons scavenge on Chinese stone, the young overflow when the toilets are full at 1 a.m. You'll watch them mingle with the long sides of ghosts, bumping into directions and landmarks, always moving. I am going to... finish up on... What is it about 15 minutes? Is that that? Yeah. I'm going to finish up. I thought the five-word challenge was brilliant. I think it's such a fantastic idea. I love the idea that, you know, people take the same five words and end up with such completely different poems. It's a magical thing to do, and it's a lovely way to start a poetry reading, and an unusual one. Great fun. And I scribbled one because I was reading that, I was trying to distract myself. I didn't really want to focus on the fact that I would be having set up here as before. So I scribbled one off. I'm going to read it simply because I thought it was great. Everybody who got up and read one, well done to you. And so this is my one. And she squirreled away the money she would give her landlord when she got one, when she would find her own temper, learn how she would spell cantankerous, give her old man the long view of the back of her, when she would be no one's tenant for the length of the North Circular Road. Thank you.